God's hero. I love superheroes. I was a comic book geek long before anybody came up with the term the MCU. I have been in the superhero world since I was big enough to read. And it's just fun, and they make really fun backdrops for sermon series, especially since the Bible is full of heroic people. People that have special abilities, people that did heroic things, people that we paint as superhuman. Here's the problem. I'm not a hero. I have no superpowers. I have no secret lair. I don't own a cape. And you can thank me later, I wouldn't be caught dead in spandex. Just not my thing. And you know what the sad thing is? I don't even know that I'm a super Christian. I mean, let's just be honest. I struggle with sin. Maybe that bothers you because I'm standing up here and you're sitting down there and you're thinking, well, you're the man. I struggle with sin. I oftentimes avoid God. I have those times in my life when the last person in the universe that I want to hear from is God. Just leave me alone. I'm good. And as much as I like to talk about it, when it comes to sharing faith, well, I'm not a hero, folks. My courage, it shrinks at times. God will shove somebody into my path that I'm supposed to share God's word with, and I couldn't open my mouth if my life depended upon it. I know you're thinking, I've never seen you not able to open your mouth there. Well, it happens. And here's the problem. When I look at the Bible, and everybody keeps telling me about all the heroes, and then I look at my life, I have a hard time relating to heroes. I do. I mean, I like them. I like to read about them. But real, honest-to-goodness heroes? So a few years ago, I came up with an idea. How about instead of we look at the heroes of the Bible, we go look at the screw-ups in the Bible? Those people I can relate to. And we called the concept, Not Another Hero. These are the people that just couldn't get it right. These are the people that at the end of their story, for the most part, it was tragic. We looked at Samson, and yes, he had superpowers, but he also had super issues that were eventually his undoing. Last year, we kind of delved into this little backdrop, and we looked at the guy named Gideon, and we unmasked Gideon, who won a super battle, but then committed the super sin of setting up an idol that would eventually lead Israel back down the path. So we're going into a third rendition of this idea of not another hero, but we're going to leave Judges, and we're going to head over to the book of Genesis, Genesis chapter 13. So if you have your copy of God's Word, you can make your way to Genesis chapter 13. Real easy to find. Open the cover, keep going until you get to the first book, and then just find the 13th chapter, Genesis chapter 13. And we're going to do a sermon series called A Lot to Learn About Life. And that's a pun. I like puns. Because Lot is not just a lot as much to learn. There is a person in the Bible named Lot. Now, who is he? He is the nephew of Abraham. Genesis chapter 13, verses 1 and 2. So Abram went up from Egypt to Negev and with his wife and everything he had, and Lot went with him. Abram had become very wealthy in livestock and silver and gold. So he was the nephew of Abram, who would eventually become Abraham. Okay, so Abraham's nephew, and well, Lot was a family man. Surprise, surprise. We don't usually think of Lot this way, but this man had a wife and had two daughters. So Lot was indeed a family man. And Lot, well, at one point in his life, he was very wealthy in his own life, in his own right. Genesis chapter 13, verses 5 and 6. Now Lot, who was moving about with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents. But the land could not support them while they stayed together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to stay together. He sounds like a pretty cool dude. This isn't what we know Lot for, do we? When I say the name Lot, there are some other things that come into your mind if you actually understand who Lot is in the Bible, because this is the man that was constantly making bad decisions. Over and over and over again in his life, decision after decision, God kept putting them in front of him, and it doesn't seem like Lot knew how to make a good decision. We know Lot, right? This is the man that literally had to be pulled out of Sodom and Gomorrah just before it was destroyed. We know Lot. Had this conversation with somebody this morning. When I say the name Lot, everybody knows who Lot is, right? Lot was the man whose wife was turned into a pillar of salt. Yeah, you see that coming next week, right? Mother's Day, wife, got two daughters. Yeah, you get that, right? Lot's wife is important. Lot is the man that offered his two daughters to a group of men to be raped. And I have no other way to put that. And I see people's heads shaking and mine, I'm like, how? Why? That's disgusting. But that's not the worst of it. Because guess what? Lot is also the man that later on got drunk and had sex with those same two daughters and produced offspring. What a horrible man. Here's the question. Are you sure he's horrible? Because I know somebody that had a very different opinion of him. His name was Peter. This is what Peter writes in 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 6 and 7. If he condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah by burning them to ashes and made them an example of what was going to happen to the ungodly, and if he rescued Lot, a righteous man who was distressed by the depraved conduct of the lawless. Lot the righteous man? I don't know, maybe Peter was out fishing the day they did the lesson on Lot. Lot the righteous man? Are you kidding me? But that's what Peter calls him. He calls him a righteous man. And now I'm intrigued. And the reason I'm intrigued is because I know that I have all these things that are wrong with my life, and all these things that are wrong with my relationship with God, and all these things that after years and years and years and years of doing what I call my best, I still struggle with it. And if Lot can live the kind of life he led and somehow still get that tag righteous, there's hope for me, right? There might be a little bit of sliver of hope that maybe somewhere down the road, righteousness can be found by Barry. Maybe I can be a hero. I'm still not wearing spandex, okay? It's not happening. Now, I don't want us to lose sight of our theme for the year. Remember, we entered this year. We are looking at in the world, not of the world. We're attempting to figure out how is it that we, the Christian, are supposed to live in this world, which is a pretty horrible place at times, and not get of it. So remember, from Solomon, we learned that it's all about learning how to fear God. From the celebration series that we just finished up, we learned about how it's all about how to learn how to focus on God. And well, Lot is a man that absolutely struggled with the concept. And so let's just take a look and see if we can, over the next 5 to 6 weeks, six if you're counting this week, sit down and figure out how did Lot do it so wrong, but still, at the end of the day, have the Apostle Peter say, Lot the righteous man. And you're still shaking your head. And you know what? I don't get it either. So let's take a look. And the first thing we find out for Lot's life, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. And in Lot's life, it all starts to a decision time. We're in Genesis chapter 13, verses 7 through 9. And quarreling arose between Abram's herds and Lot's, and the Canaanite, and the Canaanites and the Perizzites were also living in, at that time. So Abram said to Lot, let's not have quarreling between you and me and between your herds and my herd and mine, for we are close relatives. It is not the whole land before you. Let's part company. If you go left, I'll go right. If you go right, I'll go left. So in Lot's early years, both men had increased in wealth. And while both men employed servants and owned slaves, I'm not going down into the whole slavery thing, but both men were doing this. So this is just the culture they were in. And amongst them, it says there grew quarreling. It's nobody's fault. Sometimes that's just how life works. And that quarreling was about to lead to change because Abraham realized something. Lot, your path and my path, they're not supposed to be the same. And you know what? Knowing when it's time to move on is one of the hardest things to do in life. We like things to stay the same, right? We hate goodbyes. We like to cling to our relationships, whether they be part of our family or our work relationship or our church relationships, and nobody likes to see a relationship end. But when Abraham makes this decision, I'd like to turn back just one chapter and remind you of something. Abraham had already listened to God say, go. Genesis chapter 1, 12, verse 1. The Lord had said to Abram, go from your country to your people, your father's household, and the land I will show you. So going back, Abraham had just done this. God said, Abram, I have another thing for your life. Pack up and go. Where are we going, God? Don't worry about the where. You just go. And well, much to Abram's credit, he did it just like God said. So Abram went, and as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abraham was 75 years old. Yeah, he was an old hero. 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, and the possessions they had accumulated, and the people they had acquired from Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan, and they arrived there. And this is an important lesson for us as we start talking about this end, not of concept and where Lot's life went wrong, because sometimes living is not just about physical possessions. Sometimes it becomes about prioritizing your relationships. Ugh. Yeah, sometimes it isn't enough that you're willing to get rid of your stuff. God's like, okay, let's talk about your relationships for a second. And sometimes it means that we must let people go their own way, knowing that we've chosen God's way. Folks, there's only two words for that. That's hard. Especially if it's somebody I care about, somebody that's part of my life, somebody that is a relative, somebody, and I know what's going on in their life, and I see them heading down that path, and I just want to cling to them and hug them and hold on to them and lecture them and preach at them. And Abraham is kind of like, what? Call it a hunch. But I don't think we're walking the same road. And we're going to just have to go different parts. Now, I want you to know, Abraham did not abandon Lot. Abraham will be back multiple times for Lot. But Abraham realized, Lot, where you're going in your life is not where I'm going. And so you go your way, and I'll go mine. And when it came all down to it, what do you see? Verse 10, back in chapter 13. Lot looked around and saw the whole plain of Jordan towards Zoar. He was well watered and like the garden of the Lord, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Abraham looked at Lot and said, Lot, you pick first. You get Lot. Now he's kind of like, I get to pick? This is easier than a Capital One commercial. I know exactly what I'm going to pick, because he looked around. Man, I got over this way, and I got over this way, and I got over this way, and I just start looking around. And that's where it all began. It always begins with your eyes. Lot was looking around, and as Lot looked around, what did Lot see? I love it. It says, I see the way that's easy to travel. He looked out, and he saw the plains of Jordan, so that means I see flat land. I see flat land, and it's green, and it's pastured, and it's awesome. And look at that. I get to pick. How about the land that's easy to live in? It said it was well watered like a garden, so I don't have to work. I can go out there and I can just do all the things that I want to do. And it's the easy life for me. And I'm sure Lot's thinking, duh, this has got to be the easiest choice in the universe. I got the hillside and the mountains, or I've got this. What he did not see was the cities. Now, okay, I get it. He saw the cities. Those cities probably were part of his decision. After all, those cities meant a good place to go sell your goods, right? Those cities were going to add to the convenience of his life. There would be marketplaces and things like that. Those cities, when they get attacked, hey, guess what? Those cities will be useful for protection. I'm sure those cities were in his eyes. But what he blinded himself to was the influence of those cities. Because as you read verse 13 of chapter 13, the Bible says, now the people of Sodom were wicked and were sinning greatly against the Lord. You know, folks, this world has a whole lot to offer and it has endless opportunities. And when we look around, there's a whole lot to see, and we tend to want to take it all in. By the way, that's chasing the wind. We already did that sermon series. Lot was about to make the decision of a lifetime. He saw all the world's benefits and none of its entrapments. Yeah, I know somebody that makes decisions that way. Me. I can do that. So why did Lot choose where he chose? So Lot chose for himself the whole plain of Jordan and set out toward the east when the two men parted company. So out of the entire story, this is but one verse. And out of that entire verse, I'm only interested in one word. You know what the word is? Himself. Abraham said, pick. And Lot said, I can, this is a no-brainer. I can pick because I can look. And Lot thought very much how I think, and I know how everybody in the world thinks. He thought, what's good for me now? Well watered, got the plane, got everything I need. What is good for my life in the here and now? That's what I'm going to pick. Maybe he threw a little psychology into it. You know, you want to convince yourself, especially if you're the guy, this is good for my family. Right? I mean, because guess what? Those cities mean that there are going to be schools and there's places I can send my daughters to go get a good education. And those cities mean that there are going to be people and other kids their age, so they'll have playmates. And those cities mean that, guess what? My wife, well, maybe there'll be some friends in those cities and she can make friends. And all of this is great for my family, Lord. And with all of those cities around, there'll be so much to do and there'll be so many things and they'll have been such a complete life. Obviously, God, you want me to go that way, right? He thought about what was good for his later. Notice it in quote. Because I'm sure he thought, you know, with all of that stuff out there, I'm going to be able to make a fortune with all the goods that I have. I'm going to be able to build barns and bigger barns and stock it all away. And you know what? All is going to be good. And someday I'll be able to retire. And God, won't that be awesome for us? He wasn't thinking about that, was he? No, it's not the God part. He was looking at them cities. He's thinking, what's in it for me? This is an easy decision. You notice what was missing? Where's God in his decision? Did it say he stopped for a minute and prayed? Did it say he stopped and built an altar to God and asked God to bless his life? In the entire lessons on Lot and his entire life, you know what you never see? God a priority. He mentions God a few times. Obviously, he had a belief in God. He's a righteous man. Somehow, God never made it to the top four of his priority list. Lot just continued doing exactly what he wanted to do. And it brings us to an interesting question. Where do you live? Verse 12. Abram lived in the land of Canaan while Lot lived. Notice his focus now. Among the cities of the plain and pitched his tents near Sodom. I almost put the tent back up here last week. We had a couple weeks ago. But I just didn't have time to put up a tent this week. He pitched his tents. Lot convinced himself that the plains were what he was all about. However, near the city. He wasn't interested in those plains, was he? He wasn't interested in those well-watered territories. What was he interested in? The cities. And you know, I think a lot of us get here because you know what? This his living arrangements changes, and we'll get into that. Lot just could not stay away from the city. But notice where he starts. It says, near the city. Therefore, you get Lot's mindset. I am close enough to go in it, but since my zip code is a different zip code, I'm far enough away to not be of it. And when we, the church, define in, not of, that is exactly what we are currently doing. How close can I get to the edge before I fall off? How much can I play with the fire before I get burned? How deep can I go out in the water before the current pulls me under? We treat in, not of, very liberally. Because I'm a righteous man, right? I can play with sin, and I can get all the way up to the edge, and I can keep going, and I can keep going. And I'm a righteous man, so when I get to the edge, I know when it's time to stop, right? Boy, I wish. I would have a cape. I might even wear spandex if I could do that. So this is who we are. We treat in, not of, very liberally in the way that we define it. We set up rules and regulations that we know that we can meet. And as long as I don't do those things, I'm in this world, but I'm not of this world. And on and on and on we go. Until we meet this guy named Jesus. And he says, it ain't possible. No one, let me read that again. No one, let me make sure, no one, that means no one, not anybody in this building, not the person standing on the stage, not anybody online, not anybody out in the world. There is no one that can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God, and the word that they use here is money, but you can take that word money out and you can put anything in the world that you want in there because you just can't do it. You cannot determine that you're going to live your life on the edge and not expect that at some point you're going to fall into the pit. I can't help you with that. Because at some point, there's going to be a defining moment in your life. Somewhere along the way, your earthly connecting points are going to come in direct conflict with your Christly claims. And at some point, you're going to have a moment of choice. Just like Lot. Think we're in the right verse, in the right section, in the right story? Yeah, I can identify with this man. See, the question becomes is when those life moments come, who do you hear? Verses 14 through 17, the Lord said to Abram, after Lot had parted from him, look around from where you are, to the north and the south and the east and the west. All the land that you see I will give you and your offspring ever. I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted. Go walk through the length and the breadth of the land, for I am giving it to you. So Abram went to live near the great trees of Mamre and Hebron, where he pitched his tents. There he built an altar to the Lord. Poor old Abraham. Lot snookered him, didn't he? Lot got all the good stuff, and Abraham just got the leftovers. Not really. Because Abraham, he was playing the long game, folks. Abraham had decided long ago, the moment when God said, get up and go, and he said, I'm going to get up and go. He had decided this journey isn't going to always be the comfortable, easy journey that I think it should be. It may be downright hard at times. And interesting, God told Abraham, when this is all said and done, it's all going to be yours. Both the way you're going and the way Lot went. He didn't leave anything covered. He went north, south, east, and west. So everywhere you go, Abraham, it's all yours. I love what it said. So Abraham lived. So Abram went and lived near the trees of Hebron, where he pitched his tents. Okay, so God, me, and you, right? I'm going where God said go, and I'm going to pitch my tent. But do you notice the second thing he did after he set up his temporary home? He built God a permanent altar. He built a place that there was the place that him and God were going to get together, because Abram had made a decision. God is the direction of my life. Folks, I hate to tell you this. In my Christian life, I have a lot to learn about decision making. Because I want to tell you, I've stood on that hill before. I've stood on that hill, and I look out there, and I see the green pastures, and I see the well-watered land, and I see all the benefits of life, and I'm like, God, we're going that way, right? And God doesn't say no. I'm like, you didn't say no. Woohoo! Off we go. And I never pay attention, right? I played on the edge of the fire, and I've been burned a few times. Funny thing, though, I still like the fire. I've stood on the edge, and I have fallen more times than you want to think. So why do I still play on the edge? Interesting thoughts, isn't it? See, my decision-making ability is clouded by me. What it is that I want out of life. Not necessarily what God wants out of life. So as we unfold this story of Lot, this is where we begin. We're going to watch Lot make the decision over and over and over. And every time he makes the decision, we're going to look at Lot and say, you are such a bonehead. Don't you get it? And at that point, I need to put a mirror right in front of me at the decision-making process that I use, because guess what? I am such a bonehead. Don't you get it? Christ came and gave his life for you. He died for you. You are so valuable to him. But yet I still make the decisions like a worthless person. I'm not God's hero because I don't want to be a hero. I just want to be me. The problem is, me takes me down some very, 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 very dark paths. That while maybe I never did the exact things that Lot did, I can relate to them. To the poor decisions of my life that put my family at risk, myself at risk, my friends at risk, and ultimately cost me many things in my life just because I didn't choose God's way.